Pleasure to introduce to you our guest interviewee for this evening, Mrs. Grace Wong Chow. And Grace will tell us what life was like while growing up as a young Chinese girl in Fresno. Now, as many of you know, Grace was honored by our society a few years ago as an outstanding Chinese pioneer woman. Now, Grace was born in Fresno in 1899. And from that date on, she's been on the go, savoring life and living each day to its fullest. At first, Grace didn't want me to reveal her birth year, but I, told her, it's really when you look at Grace and see her vivacity as a person, you couldn't even guess her age. And besides, it really, she is really an outstanding example of what I would like to be like when I get to be this venerable age. Now, Grace was one of 14 children born to Hai Loi and Lily Lum Wong. The family was one of the early Chinese families in town, and Grace's father was the owner of Hai Loi Company, a general merchandise store. He was also an outstanding leader in the community. Grace married Emery Chow, who has since passed away about 20 years ago. And together they raised a family of five children, one son and four daughters. And two of them are here today, I'm very happy to say, to hear their mother speak. Now, Emery and Grace were the owners of the Chow Tea Company, which specialized in Chinese teas, gingers, and gourmet Chinese foods that were attractively wrapped in fancy containers and sold in large department stores, such as Robinson's and small gourmet specialty shops. The Chows, after they were married, first lived in Selma for several years, and then they moved to Seattle, and then they came to Los Angeles in 1941. And after they settled here, they became founding members of the First Chinese Baptist Church. The same year they moved here, Grace became an insurance agent, and she still is actively engaged in the business. It didn't take her very long before she began distinguishing herself in the field of insurance. In 1948, she became the first Chinese American to become a member of the Million Dollar Round Table of insurance writers. In 1951, she became a Live member. In 1977, she received the highest award that can be bestowed upon an underwriter, and that is the Will G. Farrell Award for Outstanding Community Service. For 5 years, Grace served on the City of Los Angeles Human Relations Commission, having been appointed a member by Mayor Yorty in 1968. Her name can be found in several Who's Who's volumes, namely Who's Who in Los Angeles County, 1952, Who's Who for American Businesswomen, 1958, Who's Who in California, 1955, 1961. I can go on and on about the accomplishments of Grace Wong Chow, but it'll take us all evening here. And I'd like you all to give her a big welcome at this time.
Thank you. Before I start, I would like to have all my family, to stand up so you know they all support me. Would you please all stand up? Auntie Ruth and all my families, and my nieces and grandnieces. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, before Grace starts, please be seated, Grace. Before Grace starts, I need to give you a brief background of the Chinese in Fresno. This is going to be taken from the presentation that was given by Michael Opper and Lily Liu. Lily Liu happens to be a niece by marriage to Grace. And this presentation can be found in the proceedings of the 1975 National Conference on the Chinese in America. Now, according to Opper and Liu, the Chinese began appearing around the Fresno area in the 1850s, particularly in the town of Millerton. At that time, Fresno had not, you know, did not exist. In fact, Fresno didn't exist as a town until 1872, when the railroad was completed at Fresno Station. Now, when the Chinese were appeared in the Fresno area, they were involved in gold mining. They had Chinese, they had general merchandise trading stores, and they were in different trades. And although the Chinese tended to be excluded by white miners from working original discoveries, in 1861, there were 12 Chinese who banded together as Sioux and Company, and they laid claim to the riverbed 1 mile above Fort Miller, from which Millerton took its name. Now, this was one of the reasons why there was Chinese settlement in the area. Another reason was that the soldiers from Fort Miller tended to buy their supplies from the Chinese merchants rather than going into town. So by 1870, there were 309 Chinese, including 18 women, in the town of Millerton. So when Fresno was laid out as a new town, the Chinese began joining other inhabitants to occupy the town, so that you find that the Chinese were among the first settlers in Fresno. By 1874, there were 200 Chinese, and Fresno's Chinatown had become a meeting place for the Chinese from the surrounding towns of Hanford, Visalia, Armona, Lemoore, and even Bakersfield. Now, during those years when the Chinese were living in this area, they were involved in different kinds of occupations. They were contract laborers for construction, such as building irrigation ditches. They were general merchandise traders. They were cooks, herbalists, laundrymen, grocers, restaurateurs, etc. And most of the Chinese were Cantonese who came from the Samyup and Zhongshan districts in Guangdong province. Now, Chinatown itself in Fresno was on the west side, within a short distance from the railroad. It was bounded north and south by G and F streets, east and west by Mariposa and Kern streets. China Alley itself ran east and west in the center of the section of town where the majority of the Fresno Chinese lived. And it is this little part of town that Grace would tell us what life was like in those days. Okay. Wait a minute. Grace, according to the presentation, your father was mentioned, and it said that both he and your mother moved to Fresno after they were married. Do you happen to know why they moved to Fresno?
No, my father was always in Fresno. My father always lived in Fresno because his first place that he landed, he was in Los Banos, a small town a little way from Fresno. And Fresno was his home. Uh-huh. He never moved from somewhere else. When he came from China, he landed in San Francisco, then into Los Banos, and then stayed in Fresno all his life.
Oh, I see. Now, it also, in this presentation, it also said that he came to America when he was age 15. That was in 1870, and he worked for Miller Lux Ranch in Los Banos. Now, Mr. Miller had, suggested to your father that he buy land, but at that time he didn't want to buy land. Do you know the reason for?
Mr. Miller was almost like a father to him, because he was there, living there with a family. So when he grew up a little bit, Mr. Miller said, Wong, would you? His name is not Hai Loi Wong.
Oh.
His name is Wong Jin in Chinese, but he called him just Wong. Uh-huh. Later on, he got the name Hai Loi because when he got into business, his store was Hai Loi Wong and Company, so everybody called him Hai Loi. That's where he got the name Hai Loi. But after he got married, he had another name, Wong Wan Gum. That's
the Chinese call it, it says ho. Uh-huh. But after he gets married, he has another name. When he's a young man, then his name is Wang Ah Jun. Uh-huh. So my father was just like a son to this Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller say, Wang, I want you to go and take a lantern and camp at that piece of land for 1 week, and all that land will belong to you. And then after you 1 week, you go to another piece of land, you put you just camp there 1 week, and that is yours. You just do it now. That's where I got my land. Mm-hmm. He said, no, Mr. Miller, I don't want the land. I promised my mother that if I come to America, when I make good, I must return to see them and live with them and die in China, not in America. I don't want the land. So when we were little, he used to tell us, I was a darn fool. I could have been a millionaire today and own all that land. Look at Mr. Miller, own all the land and all the cattle today. Mm-hmm. So that's why he didn't do what Mr. Miller told him. Oh.
Okay. Now, when you were growing up in Fresno, what was the town like? What kind of businesses were the Chinese in at that time?
Oh, there was a lot of action in Fresno. There was war. When I was a little girl, I used to go to those gambling places, great big gambling places, and they have these miniature dolls that run by electricity. They're all in Chinese gowns, you know, and they attracted me. I used to go in there and watch it all the time, and I watched the people play fan tan, and everybody knows me. They all call me Tang An Yo because my eyes were so big, they gave me that name. Yo, yo, come here. And I go in and look at those little miniature dolls. And the Chinese were in the gambling business, and a big restaurant, the restaurant are always on the second or third floor. Go Lao Guan, those. Then they say it's high up, it's a first class restaurant. It's down on the main floor, it's just an ordinary restaurant, you see. For the big social event, they always go to these big restaurants and do a lot of climbing. But there was two big restaurants, Yut Fa Lao, owned by some Heng Shan people by the name of Jiang. They're still in Fresno. Then they move over to the other part of town, later called the Mandarin Restaurant. Then there was a Yut Fa Lao, and that's also owned by Heng Shan people. And then they're I can just go on the drugstores and the grocery stores, two big grocery stores right in China Alley, where all China Alley and Tulare Street were all the restaurant and business places. And there was two big grocery stores. One was owned by the Siyap people, Wong, by the name of Wong. Mm-hmm. And Fuke, the name is Fuke Grocery. And the other one right across from him is owned by some Hong San people. Sing Pang, and they both do a tremendous business. And New Year time, they just can't take care of the mob that comes in for grocery. And my mother used to, I won't talk about my mother till a little later on.
Okay.
When I was little, my mother used to make me the errand girl of family, and I had to do all the shopping for her. And she said, oh, you get this, you get that, and then you bring this money back to me, and it changed. I used to do all the errands, and I'd do all the shopping for her, because the women are not allowed to go out in those days, you know. They're not allowed to go out of the house. Respectable woman is to stay home, and his face is only shown to the husband and no one else. And on New Year night, when they go out to visit people, they take an umbrella and hide their face to go out. They don't want to show their face. I know once upon a time, there's a cousin who came to visit my mother. Not visit my mother, wanted to have some business with my father. He came in. He said, I want to see your husband. She wouldn't go out. She dragged me out in the room there with her. Mm-hmm. When the cousin came in and asked for my father, And he wouldn't look at my mother's eyes, you know, looking at her. He'd turn around, looks out the window, talking to my mother. And my mother just put her head like this, you know. That's the way they had to live. Mm-hmm. Women are not to go out. They have to stay home, take care of the family. I guess that's why mother, I have 13 children.
I probably should explain a little bit, you know, I had mentioned about the Samyap and the Cheongsam. For those of you who are not familiar with these terms, Guangdong province, from which most of the Cantonese came, was divided into certain districts. And most of the early Chinese came from these two particular districts in China, the Samyap district, well, three districts, Samyap district, the Seiyap. Cheongsam district, and the Seiyap district, okay?
And there's also the Hakka.
Oh, okay, no. Tell about the Hakka.
Well, right on G Street, there's the first, now my father's store is on G Street, the Hai Loi Company. I had Tai Loi, Gong Xi. And that's everybody called her Tai Loi Mo, Tai Loi So. They always call my mother by that name too. Then there was Tai Loi Company, and then there's a Jiang family, big store, and is owned by the Hakka people. So Yin Bak, I still remember his name. So Yin Bak has a big store there. And then there's some more Chinese store owned by the Wongs, and there's laundry. And there's some interesting barber shop. You know, in those old days, these barber shop, they have a little coal oil lamp on the side of the wall, and just a few little, you know, they use those big, not safety razor, you know, those regular razor, mm-hmm. and they comb their hair, and they I don't know. What else they do?
They clean their ears.
And they all have keel, you know. In those days, they all have keel, long keel, and they would just comb their keel just so, and with black tassels in the end, you know. Mm-hmm. Only for 25 cents. but this Wong, this Wong belonged to our village, mm-hmm. and he's Lo Wong, and then he's the main barber shop. And there's another barber shop, Wong Hua Sing, another barber shop, Lo Wong. Their descendant is still here. Their grandson and their son is still here in Los Angeles. Oh, I see them once in a while. And well, he had a good business, but this other one, Wong Hua He, he has the best business. And when he died, he had a whole trunk full of money, coins, gold coins, and everything, just big trunk full when he died. And all the different people come and just, some of the Wong came and took some away. And the people said, I just went to Sacramento a few weeks ago, and I found out from the cousin. I said, how did Ahaba, what did he do with the money? He said, a different organization came and took it away, but it didn't belong to him. Being a barber, he didn't make all that money. You know why? Because in the early days, the Chinese don't know how to go to the bank. And they don't, when they go to work, they come back with their earning, they just give it to him and tell him to put it away for him. And they belonged to a different one. So when they died, all that money was gone. Oh. You see?
How sad.
Isn't it sad? I just found out they said didn't belong. I thought it belonged to him. I said, how can that man make so much money just being a barber?
Oh, you know. So he was a local banker.
Yeah, he was a local banker.
Now, there were about, when I was talking to you before this, we counted about 15 families.
More than that. When I, after I told you, I counted much more than that. Much more.
Now, did all of you children go to school together in the same area? Schools?
Yes, we went to Lincoln School, Columbia School. That was the nearest school to Chinatown.
Did you all go to Chinese school after that?
Oh, the girls were not allowed to go
to Chinese school.
And not even allowed to go to American school when they reached a certain age. They just won't let, but it's compulsory. They had to go and they had to let the girl go.
What age did the girls stop going to school?
say 13, 14. And when I was 12 years old, my mother wouldn't let me go, when I go to shop for her, I can't go to Chinatown. I have to go through two blocks away and go, you're not going to show your face to the men folks. You're getting big now. You're a young lady now. And I had to walk. Well, that's the way.
So what did the girls do then when they were growing up?
Stay home, learn how to sew and knit and embroidery and how to make garment and how to make Chinese button. My mother used to taught us all that. My mother was a great seamstress. Mm-hmm.
So did you have to make your own clothes? Or
she taught us how to make it. I said, Mother, there's a sewing machine. Why can't we use the sewing machine? Oh, no. Learn all the stitches. Blind stitch, slip stitch, overhand, and this and that. All the stitches. I have to know the name and make the sample. And they said, all right. After you learn all the stitches, you know why, Grace? Because someday you may marry a husband who can't afford your machine, or sewing machine. You know how to sew by hand. I said, I don't want to marry a man that can't afford a machine.
So none of the girls went to Chinese school then, either, but the boys did.
No, that's mixed up with the boys. They don't want us to go to Chinese school.
So how did, but did you have other kinds of activities, though, besides sewing?
Oh, I went to church. But when I went to church, boy, I had to do a big tub of washing before she let me go. Because a big family, we all had to pitch in and help.
Was there a Chinese church in the
Chinese French? Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about
it. You want me to tell about, we had a missionary, Miss E.S. Stein. She was a German missionary. Mm-hmm. And she's the first Chinese missionary. She can speak excellent Chinese and read Chinese Bible. And she'd go and shop for the lady. She'd ride on a bicycle with a black blouse, black skirt, and ride on the bicycle. Every morning early, she'd go visit each family. She organized herself and she can say, Lai Bai Yat, Lai Bai Yi, Lai Bai Sam, Lai Bai Se, Lai Bai Ng. She cannot say. She said, Lai Bai Ng. And that was
that's
one
Friday.
That's Friday. She had a hard time saying that. But she speaks Chinese, speaks the Cantonese, and she could read the Bible. And I remember my mother, many times she'd tell a story. I was surprised, and I go up and I knew. I didn't know what my mother was talking. She said, La Sa Lo Wa, La Sa Lo Wa. I'm a Stein, Gong Wa Tang La, La Sa Lo Ne, Yes, so, like Gao Fan Kaya. She said, Lazarus. Jesus came and raised him from the dead. And when I was little, I didn't know what she was talking about. But you see, the missionary came and told a story. And she'd tell us to us. And she used to go to each family. They need needle, or need material for something, thread. And she would write it down, give her a sample. And she does all that for the Chinese lady, one by one. And she would take the children. When the children were ready to go to school, she would take them to school and get them settled and give them an American name. You see, the mother don't know how to do it. All of them, they do not speak English. They all speak Chinese. But I was very fortunate. My mother speaks English, Chinese, and speaks excellent Spanish. I was very lucky to have a mother. She's a smart woman.
So what else did your mother teach you? You mentioned that your mother taught you some songs.
Oh, my mother is a wonderful person. She can sew, and she can knit, she can embroidery, she make beautiful quilt, and make beautiful hats for my brothers when they're little, and had little pieces of silk make the roses on them, big tassels hanging down. Oh, they were just beautiful hats, you know, for my mm-hmm. brother. And I said, how did you get it all shaped up like that? She'd take a can, one of these coffee can, big can, and she fix that hat while it's wet, and she fold them like fans and make it in a shape so beautiful. And my brother Freddie, my brother Raymond used to wear them with pride. And she taught us how to, when I was little, when the girls, and at night we had to sit around the table, and my mother taught us how to make the Chinese button. And we made, oh, yards and yards of these buttons of different color. We'll hang it on the wall. Whenever we need button, we'll pull it out and make buttons. She knew how, she told us how to do it, to make all these fancy Chinese buttons. Mm-hmm. And she taught us to do that. She was a good businesswoman. She planned her vegetable all at the right season. Mm-hmm. And she tied them up so beautiful and fresh, all the different kinds of Chinese vegetable, not American Chinese vegetable. She said, oh, take it down to Fuki and give me, she bought me a little red wagon. Mm-hmm. I was just 7 years old and had to do all that for her. I guess that's why I got my business training early. Mm-hmm. And I pulled that up and said, all right, you take it to Fuki. And when he gave you, I think it was $2 or $1.60, I remember $1.60, you bring it back to me, all right? I was the delivery girl. I did her marketing for her. All right. And then she has these flowers. She planted these tube roses. Beautiful tube roses. Yukjianfa. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful, healthy flower. She really has a green thumb. She takes these flowers and she buys a new broom. A broom, you know. Mm-hmm. A new one. And she picks those straw out of the broom. She put these flowers on. Six of them on one straw. You see? She's pretty smart. She didn't have to invest very much money for her business, you know. And I take these flowers. Oh, I take it down to Mia Gu, take my Gu. In Chinatown, I Gu them is these prostitutes, the Chinese prostitutes. So I take it down to them and bring back a $2, $1, and I bring it back to her. Mm-hmm. It was wide open. Opium den, prostitute in Fresno in those days was just wide open. The police just walked the street. They didn't care, they don't pay any attention to you. They don't see it at all. And the Chinese people in those days really, and they have other restaurants too. And the Chinese girls, when they were just marriageable age, they have a matchmaker come, mm-hmm. you know, and they take your picture. Oh. And I mean, your photograph, you already have photograph, right. Just give it to her and she'll go and take to the boy's side of the family and show. They change a picture. Uh-huh. And she had to do a lot of talking. And they get the marriage going so that they get married, you know. Uh-huh. But anyway, one girl, her name is, I forgot her name, but she married a Lee afterward. She's still living in Fresno. Very beautiful woman. And this was a talk of the town, quite a gossip at that time. Give her a picture and show her. And she said to her mother, she didn't like the picture. She said, I don't want to marry him. If you like him, you marry her. You marry him. And then, oh, they thought that was terrible for a girl to say that to the mother, mm-hmm. you see. But she married a very nice looking man afterward. Mm-hmm. The descendant was still in Fresno. You know, in Fresno, and one of the girls married in Bakersfield. But anyway, the girls have nothing to say mm-hmm. in those days. If the father and mothers match you up, out you go. We just don't say anything. Right. My sister was married off that way.
Mm-hmm. I'll come to you in a minute.
No, okay. You want me to tell you the procedure of the wedding, Chinese wedding?
Right. Well, I wanted to have you sing us one of those childhood songs that your mother taught
us. Oh, my mother taught us that. While we were sewing, she would teach us these songs. She said, you have to learn it. If you don't learn it, when you get married, you don't know how to sing this. Or it's more, you know, when a girl marry out of the family, they consider it's kind of a funeral. Like the Jewish people, when their family become a Christian, they give a funeral service. This is the kind of ceremony. It's very sad. They really wail. That's why they wail and sing. They don't really sing in a happy tune. They really wail, you know.
Okay, you're talking about the wedding.
The wedding.
The song, right?
Is
now.
That what you want me to tell?
No, I was going to tell about the.
Oh, you want me to
the Chinese songs, the chants first.
The chanting of
the nursery.
Right. Oh, the nursery for the little children.
Uh-huh.
Oh yes. I'll sing you a little song. I used to teach my children. All my children know this little song. It's about a bird. You know, about a little bird has a little bamboo in her, in a little small young bamboo in on her lip, and she flew up to the tree and watched a beautiful maiden there. And this is the way it goes. 我着仔担竹枝，担上荒头望阿姨，阿姨梳着玲珑髻，插朵红花半髻围，辫带又长脚又细，又咁好花鞋踩落泥。